Welcome to the First Century Church Podcast. My name is Stephen Wilhoy, and I'm the lead pastor at First Century Church, and it is an honor to have you with us today. The goal of the podcast is simple. We want you to be encouraged, challenged, and inspired to go further in your faith than ever before. If you'd like more information about the church, you can visit our website, firstcenturykc.com. And if you happen to be in the Kansas City area anytime soon, we'd love to have you join us for one of our live gatherings to connect with you in person. Again, thanks for joining us today, and we hope that you enjoy today's message. As we get started, I want to see if these kinds of questions or statements resonate with you. Maybe you've asked these questions before. Maybe you've asked this question, or you've said this statement. Boy, that came out of nowhere. Yep. Just something in life in general, a situation, whatever, a change. Or I wasn't expecting that to happen. And then maybe with that, you say, well, what am I going to do now? That's a big question that we sometimes ask. Or connected to that is this question, where did the time go? I mean, like literally, Thanksgiving is this week. Where did the time go? Where did the year go? It's like the calendar is really thin here, and we're looking forward to next year already and thinking about what's coming up and what we've got to do and what our goals and dreams are and all the things we want to accomplish in the coming year. So where did the time go? We ask these kind of questions all the time. And these are real life kind of hit you in the face questions. And today we're going to finish James chapter 4 in our series Wisdom for Life. And we just have 2 weeks left. We'll spend 2 weeks in chapter 5. We'll be done with the series in a couple of weeks. But today, at the end of James, a very short section where James is really going to hit us in the face with a couple of stark realities about life. And then he will challenge us on how to respond to some of those types of questions that we just asked, some of those statements that we just made that we make all the time. How do we properly deal with these challenges, these changes, and as time goes by? And so today, this Wisdom for Life message is probably the most practical wisdom for life. It's very broad and sweeping. I think it can impact anyone in any situation, even if not now, maybe later, something to kind of put in your back pocket. And so I'm really excited to share this message with you today. And so if you have a Bible or you have the Bible on your phone, you want to use a Bible under one of the chairs, join me in James chapter 4 today. We're just going to read the last section, just five verses here in James chapter 4 as we see this wisdom for life again today. So James chapter 4, we're going to start at verse number 13 and go through the end of the chapter. James 4, 13. He says, "Look here, you who say, today or tomorrow we are going to a certain town and we'll stay there a year. We will do business there and make a profit." And then James says this, "How do you know what your life will be like tomorrow? Your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, then it's gone. What you ought to say is, if the Lord wants us to, we will live and do this or that. Otherwise, you are boasting about your own pretentious plans, and all such boasting is evil. Remember, it is sin to know what you ought to do and then not do it." That verse at the end, it's going to sort of carry over into next week a little bit more. It's strange. It seems like it goes better with next week, but it applies here too. So we'll kind of hit it twice in the next couple of weeks. But in this section here, just a few verses, but James really points out two very harsh realities about life. And that is this: life is unpredictable and time is uncontrollable. That just hits us right smack in the face, doesn't it? I don't want to hear that. No. Sorry, buckle up. Here we go, right? We have limited scope in how we view life, don't we? We have limited field of vision. We have limited range of vision. We don't have the foresight that we sometimes wish we do and sometimes that we think we do. That's what James is telling us here. We have limited power in planning life. Remember the year 2020? Probably didn't go how you thought it did on January 1 of that year, did it? Probably, you know, this thing now, it's overused, but that wasn't on your bingo card. Your bingo card was like torn into pieces and thrown in the trash and lit on fire and then sent in a rocket into space. That's how unpredictable life can be. And just 5 years ago, we saw proof of that. Even in our everyday life, success and failure are dependent upon things completely out of our control. You know, in some ways, now you might not like this word or term, but I'm going to use it anyway. Sometimes just luck. has a lot to do with life. There's luck in life. Think about a golfer. He has a putt to win the tournament. If he wins, he's going to make $1.3 million. If he misses, he's going to make tons of money, but second place is like 10 times less than that. And so this one putt will determine his paycheck for the week, which will change his life, maybe his career. And if that putt sort of lips around and shoots off the edge of that cup, boy, was that bad luck. Boy, was he off by a hair of an inch, and yet it changed the trajectory maybe of that person's career. Or maybe you've been like this. You've had a job interview, and you think you nailed it, but the person after you nailed it even better, and so it's just sort of bad luck. It's just how things sometimes tend to go. You know, when it comes to luck or fortune, you know, I've always had a dream of playing in the NBA. Bad luck, you know, right? I just didn't get the jeans. I didn't get the khakis. I didn't get anything I needed to ever make it in the NBA. It's just not going to happen for me. So that's just, yeah, it's just maybe bad luck. Or maybe, you know, even like entering a raffle. I know, so I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again quickly. Kim and I were on a cruise right after we finished college, and we went to the jewelry store. They were having a raffle. We're going to give away this really nice, expensive watch. You just got to take a ticket and come back at 7:30 p.m. on the dot right here in the middle of this floor, and we'll pull one number out. And if you pull your number, there's nothing to sign up for, just a free watch. And so we got the ticket that afternoon. We're up at dinner, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's like 7:25. I gotta run. So I leave dinner, run down to the jewelry store and wait. And of course, I'm an eternal pessimist, so I just assume this is not gonna happen. But guess they call the number of the ticket that I had. So, you know, my wife got a really nice free watch. That was my contribution to our cruise. But so, you know, that's just random stupid luck, just blind luck. Sometimes life, for good or bad, works that way. Sometimes timing is how life happens to us. Sometimes you're in the right place at the right time. Maybe that's how you met your spouse. We just happened to meet at the right place at the right time, and here we are happily ever after, okay? And or maybe you're running late for work, and so you feel like that's a negative, but when you pull up, you find that you're now in traffic because an accident that would have happened when you were going through that intersection didn't happen to you because you were running late. Timing has a way of working sometimes in our favor and sometimes not. Because maybe this happened to you. You've been hired at a new job right before they hire new management, and the management gets rid of your job, you know? So sometimes timing can either have a good effect or a bad effect. But what James is saying is that we can't control those things. So much of what happens in our life is out of our control. So the cartoonist Bill Watterson of Calvin and Hobbes fame, he once said this. He said, "Reality continues to ruin my life." Okay? So that's just how it is. Life is unpredictable and time is uncontrollable. So with that in mind, James is challenging us here. Okay, as a Christ follower, how do I respond to that reality? As someone who tries to put Jesus first and at the center of all that I do, if everything that I do is out of my control, how do I live in light of that harsh reality? So there's an option that James describes here that I'm going to give it a certain title or name or category. We're tempted to choose this, James says, but we're warned by him to avoid it. And that is, we live by presumption. What he's cautioning us against here in this short section is to not live a life of presumption. Remember, he says, you know, people say we will do this thing will happen. So presumption, practically, is knowing about the nature of life and time in the back of our minds, but practically living as if it's not the case. So it's acting as if we have more control than we really do. And then it's living in the constant disappointment that we don't. That's what James is telling us to avoid. And so the deeper issue here, the main problem, we'll talk about three problems of presumption for just a few minutes here, but the reason that it's a problem is because the deeper issue of presumption in living life is that what we do is we exclude the only person who can control our life, and that is God. When I live under my own presumption and I just assume this is going to happen and I'm certain this is going to work out this way, but I leave God out of the equation, that's when bad things begin to happen. So let's look quickly at three problems of presumption here, three problems that presumption leads to in our lives. Here's the first one. Presumption ignores God's clear commands because it's just based on what I want to do, how I feel. No matter what God has said clearly, I'm going to just do what I want anyway. That's Genesis 3, right? That's the Garden of Eden. God had clear commands for the man and woman. There's this one tree in the garden. You are not to eat of it or you will die. And so they presumed, well, maybe God really didn't mean that. And it didn't take much convincing from the serpent to make them, I mean, they were willing to just cross the line. They were ready because it looked good, it says. It looked pleasing and pleasant and beautiful and delicious. And so they wanted that thing and they gave in to that thing. They presumed that what they wanted was more important than what God had said. There's another maybe less known example of this, and this is King Saul in 1 Samuel 13, where this presumption was his downfall. It was his downfall. God had given clear commands to Saul that he ignored. So Israel at this time is at war with the Philistines, as usual, and Saul is going to lead an army into battle. But Samuel, the prophet, commands him, instructs him, hey, wait for 7 days before you go into battle, because what's going to happen is I'm going to come back in 7 days and make a sacrifice, then you can go into battle. So day one goes by, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six. It's day seven. Samuel hasn't come yet. So check this out. Here's what Saul does. This is 1 Samuel 13, starting at the middle of verse 7. Here's what it says. Meanwhile, Saul stayed at Gilgal, and his men were trembling with fear. Saul waited there 7 days for Samuel, as Samuel had instructed him earlier, but Samuel still didn't come. Saul realized that his troops were rapidly slipping away. So he demanded, bring me the burnt offering and the peace offerings. And Saul sacrificed the burnt offering himself. Talk about timing. Just as Saul was finishing with the burnt offering, Samuel arrived. Saul went out to meet and welcome him, but Samuel said, what is this you have done? Saul replied, I saw my men scattering from me, and you didn't arrive when you said you would, and the Philistines are at Michmash ready for battle. So I said, the Philistines are ready to march against us at Gilgal, and I haven't even asked for the Lord's help. So I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering myself before you came. How foolish, Samuel exclaimed. You have not kept the command the Lord your God gave you. Had you kept it, the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom must end. For the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. The Lord has already appointed him to be the leader of his people because you have not kept the Lord's command. Saul's presumption undid everything in his life. Because he just, now listen, look at what he tells. He seems like he has really good reasons to do what he did. Look at his explanation. The troops were slipping away. The men were scattering. There was fear in the camp. The opposing army's ready to march. What if we don't get ready in time? They're going to overtake us. It's Samuel, it's kind of your fault. It's been 7 days. You said you were going to be here and you weren't here. And so, you know, I felt compelled. Right? He uses that religious language. I felt compelled. You know, the Lord told me to do this. You ever had that used on you before as a pastor? It happens all the time. The Lord told me this. Did he? You know, that's what you have to. Did he tell you that? And that's what Samuel's telling Saul. Did you really feel compelled or did you feel impulsive? Were you presumptive? That's the problem that Saul had here. His presumptive mistake, he was led by emotion. He was led by his own perception. He was led by his impatience, and he was motivated by fear rather than God's clear instruction. Because think of Samuel's mindset here about Saul and his excuses. Okay, if the men got cold feet and deserted the army, couldn't God take care of that his way and his timing, right? If God can split bodies of water and he can stop the sun in the sky, then couldn't God deal with one army who's maybe more advanced than you wanted them to be? He probably could have. And so Samuel's also like, okay, it's still day seven. It's not day eight. It's not day nine. I'm not running late. I don't know if you're familiar with Lord of the Rings, but you know the wizard Gandalf. I'm here precisely when I mean to be here. He's not running late. He's there on day seven, and he says you were told to wait. And then again, Saul's language. I felt compelled. I had no other option. It reminds me of, you remember the church lady on SNL from years ago? Well, isn't that special? That's just what Samuel's probably telling Saul here. Well, you felt compelled. Well, good for you. Like, but he was presumptive in what he did, and it cost him everything. Not just a battle, but his kingship. Like, his line is then cut off. And guess what? Two chapters later, he makes the same mistake again, and then he's, like, cut off big time. And then he begins to literally go insane, and everything falls apart from there. Here's how this relates to us with our presumption. Don't let your emotions lead you astray. Just go with what God has said. Don't presume to know more than God knows. Just go with what God has already said. Don't assume that God's word suddenly doesn't apply to you in this area. Go with what God has said. And don't allow your impatience to get you off of God's timing. Go with what God has said. Here's a good rule of thumb. When God has spoken, let that speak for itself. I don't have to add my commentary to it. I'm just going to go with what God has said. I don't need to pile on my insecurity. I just need to go with what God has said. That's why, again, the last verse here, but it seems to connect to both chapter 4 and chapter 5, he says, if you know to do it and don't do it, it's sin, because we presume to know more than we do. So we don't want to have presumption for that reason. The second problem of presumption here is that it abuses God's mercy. Presumption abuses God's mercy. So there's another example here. So if we go back a few decades before the story that we just talked about, Samuel the prophet, when he's a young boy being trained to be the priest or the prophet. So the high priest, his name is Eli. He has two sons who are serving as priests for God. And they are naughty, naughty boys. They are corrupt. They are evil. They are sinful to the core. So there are two main things that they point out in 1 Samuel 2 is they're seducing women in the temple. And they are taking portions of sacrifices that are meant for God. They're not letting the fat burn off as the law requires. They're taking it out early to take it for themselves. And so Eli warns them, hey, guys, you got to stop. You got to get your act together. God is not pleased with this. This is not going to fly. And they just don't. They just refuse to stop. Now, we don't know why, but it's likely that they felt entitled by their position. Well, we're the priest. We're in charge. We can kind of make the rules as we go. We can do what we want. And the other danger of presumption is they got away with it for so long. Well, the next time is fine. You know, God doesn't, if God really cared, he would have told us by now. If God was really upset, he would have punished us by now. And so this presumption led to their downfall because their father Eli has given a word from God. And he says, I've seen what they've done. They've disobeyed. They've presumed on my mercy. And so then they're both going to die on the same day. So soon after, in a battle with, again, the Philistines, both of his sons are killed in this battle, and the Ark of the Covenant is captured by the Philistines. So it's a terrible day for the entire country. They presumed on God's mercy. That's a danger that James, I think, is hinting at here as well. And then in the New Testament, we'll mention another church in Revelation next week, but there's a church called Sardis, and I want to point this out quickly. So when Jesus speaks to this church, he tells them this. He says, you have a reputation for being alive, but really you're dead. And he goes on to say, it's because your actions don't meet the requirements that God demands. It goes back to James 1, where James says, don't just tell me you have faith, show me by your works that you have faith. So it's this idea that we don't want to presume on God's mercy, because presumption can easily turn into hypocrisy. And that is a danger for us and also for others. Here's the third third problem of presumption, is that we blindly act without God's guidance. We blindly act without God's guidance. So sometimes, like in the first part, sometimes God's instructions are clear, crystal clear. Here's all the details. Here's the steps. Go for it. Sometimes it's not so much. However, God will always give us enough general information on which to go by. There's always enough that God has already said. Typically in the Bible is a good place to start, you know, on the general commands, the general steps that God has for us that we can then apply specifically to our situation. So God gives us enough generally there to know what to do and what not to do. We don't have to presume. This is also the issue with Abraham in Genesis 15. God promised him an heir, a son, but it hadn't happened yet. You know, it's the same thing like Saul. Our impatience really gets us in trouble, doesn't it? Our timing that we can't control anyway, have no control over, we just get so uptight, and then we flake out on God so many times. Abraham's another example of that. So God's given him this promise of an heir, of a son, of a great nation, but it hasn't happened yet. So in Genesis 15, Abram sits with God, is like, hey, we need to talk. what's going on here? You've made this promise. You've made this really big thing that's going to happen. Nothing's happened yet. So check out what he says here in Genesis 15, 3 through 6. Abraham says, you've given me no descendants of my own, so one of my servants will be my heir. See, he's presuming. Okay, God, I got this figured out for you. No problem, okay? Then the Lord said to him, no, your servant will not be your heir, for you will have a son of your own who will be your heir. Then the Lord took Abram outside and said to him, look up into the sky and count the stars if you can. That's how many descendants you will have. And then verse 6, Abram believed the Lord, and the Lord counted him as righteous because of his faith. James has quoted that verse already earlier in this letter, pointing to Abraham's faith here. But his faith was very short-lived. It lasted for a little while, and then it just kind of fell apart because it still hadn't happened yet. And then his plan, he was going to tell God, hey, this is a great plan. Let's go with my plan. God's like, no, I've still got a plan. Hang on. Trust me. And he still doesn't do it because right after this, what does he do? He goes to his servant Hagar and has a son with her. That was not God's plan. God's like, no, you're missing this all over again. You're presuming that I don't know what I'm doing. You're presuming you're acting without my guidance on this. Because it wasn't clear. Like, God didn't say, hey, on this date, your wife will have a son. It's just kind of out there. But Abraham, his faith sort of crumbled in this moment of decision. And so he took matters into his own hands and caused problems that we still are dealing with today. So here's how this relates, I think, with us, with Abram here. You may not have all the info in a specific situation that you're facing, but resist insisting on your own way. Look for that general info that God's already given you, that general direction he's already given you. You may not know the timing in a certain situation, but wait on the Lord. Don't try to force something that's going to be a mistake. Don't try to change the timeline to suit what you want right now when God's like, it's not ready. We're not ready yet. It's not time yet. Just hang on. Just wait. Just wait, right? We may need some direction. And so what we need to do is not try to do it on our own, but use the wisdom of those around us to aid us in discerning what God's will might be. We want to avoid these lives of presumption. We don't want to make plans without consulting God. We don't want to live our lives while ignoring God. We don't want to live this life of presumption. So how do we do that though? How do we avoid living that way? So here's the problem. Sometimes if we try to avoid one extreme, what do we do? Go to the other extreme. So while we don't want to live lives of presumption, there's an equally yet opposite way that we can be tempted to live life, and that is this idea of determinism. So determinism is simply this thought or idea that all actions in the universe are predetermined. You know, you ever heard of que sera, sera? That's a great song, right? Whatever will happen, will happen. So my actions, my decisions, and choices are meaningless. That's an equally terrible option on how to live life. It's the opposite of presumption. So you think, well, that's what I should do. No. Because here, let me just quickly, I won't spend as much time on this, but I want to give us three dangers of determinism. So we have three problems of presumption, but there are three dangers of determinism. Okay, here they are. Number one, determinism destroys our prayer life. And that checks out, right? That makes sense. If I think that everything that happens in the universe is just going to happen regardless, there's no reason to pray. There's no motivation to pray because I may have a need, but it's either going to happen or it's not, and que sera, sera, and so I'm just not going to pray. But let's look ahead in James chapter 5. We'll get there in 2 weeks. In our final week, we'll focus on it. But let's look at this one verse. Here's how James focuses on prayer. Here's how he describes prayer. James 5, verse 16. He says, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. And then at the end of that verse, the earnest prayer of a righteous person has great power and produces wonderful results. So James is showing through a proper view of what prayer is, it gets rid of determinism altogether as a viable option. Because prayer changes things. Even Jesus tells us, he says, if you ask anything in my name, I will do it. Now, that seems like a very loaded statement. And there's a lot of what ifs to that statement. There's a lot of whatabouts in that statement. So I'm not claiming that I fully understand that statement or I can fully explain that statement, but I believe that statement. If we ask anything in his name, he will do it. So determinism, it's just not an option. We just can't live that way as people of faith. Also, the problem with prayer and determinism is that determinism misunderstands the real purpose of prayer anyway. Prayer is not simply designed to be, God, gimme, 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 amen. That's not what prayer is designed to be. Prayer is predominantly putting me in closer alignment with God. Prayer is not just God change this, but primarily it's God change me. We're changing all the time. Things are changing all the time. And so what we must resist is this determinism that says, well, it's just going to happen to me, or it's going to happen for me. Now, how about I go directly to the source and see what he might want? What if I tap into the source of all knowledge and all wisdom and say, God, I don't know what you're doing, but man, help me to stick close to you. So we have to avoid determinism because it destroys our prayer life. The second danger of determinism is that it undermines the Great Commission. This is this eternal que sera, sera, or spiritual que sera, sera. God knows in the end who's going to be saved and who won't be saved. He knows if it's going to happen or it's not going to happen. And so, you know, why even bother? He's going to do it, so let's just let him do it. But that's not how this works. Remember, the final words of Jesus Christ to his followers and then to us is, go into all the world and preach the gospel. Now, he's not saying you have the power to save people. It's not what he says. He's not saying God needs you to do this. No, he's saying God wants to partner with you in spreading the good news to everyone in the world. So determinism undercuts and undermines that commission. Now, the truth is, I can't save anyone, but I can tell everyone about the gospel. That's the partnership. It's not that we have the power to do anything or effectuate change. It's that we are used as a change agent in a very minor way to make a big difference. Here's what Paul says in Romans 10 about that. Here's the difference that you and I can make through the Great Commission. Romans 10, verse 14. Paul says, how can they call on him to save them unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they've never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them? And how will anyone go and tell them without being sent? That is why the scriptures say, how beautiful are the feet of the messengers who bring good news. So we're sent. Matthew 28, we're sent. And so we're sent on a mission. So no, you can't save anyone, but you can tell everyone. How will they know if they don't know? How will they hear if they haven't heard? So determinism would say, well, God knows and God will handle it, so you just sit back and watch. No, it undercuts the entire mission of what we're to do. So God knows who will be saved and who won't, but we don't. We don't know who's going to be saved and who won't. And so then that's our motivation to tell people about Jesus. He does the rest. So don't allow determinism to keep you from fulfilling the mission of Jesus. Here's the last danger of determinism, and then we'll close in just a moment. The final danger of determinism is this. Determinism wastes valuable time. We talked about how, you know, time just goes and goes. You ever feel like time just moves faster and faster the older that you get? That's an actual phenomenon. Let me tell you, I explored this this week. It's very interesting. So there's a couple of possible reasons why we have this sense that time moves faster as we get older. First, as we look back over our life lived, as we get older, it's a larger percentage of time. So looking back 1 year for a 10-year-old is 10% of their life. Looking back over 1 year as a 50-year-old is only 2% of your life. So you think, whoa, so much happened and so much time. Well, no, you just had more time, more things to look back on. So it looks like, it feels like it. You have the sense that time is moving faster and faster. That's one aspect of this. There's also this idea called the holiday paradox. It's attributed to Claudia Hammond, a psychologist. And she says this. She argues that our brain processes new experiences differently than familiar experiences. And so if there's more for the brain to process in a new experience, it seems like time is slowing down. We have that perception because our brain is figuring out all these different pinpoints of what this new thing is. What am I feeling? What am I sensing? What am I hearing? What am I experiencing? How are my emotions? So much here, okay? And so from birth to maybe young adult, most of that time is a lot of new experiences. Doing a lot of things for the first time, going to new places, meeting new people, you know, learning things in school, all that kind of thing. And then once you hit after post, you know, mid-20s and post that, we get into more of a routine. So we do fewer things for the first time. And so the brain processes those things as it just kind of skips over that. I don't have to think about that experience because I do it every day. And so when you look back over those things that you've learned and experienced, it seems like time is faster because you're doing fewer new things. So that's this holiday paradox. So time is just a weird thing, isn't it? It's just so fascinating. It's so strange. The problem with determinism is that it wastes both time early and late. We talked about what happens early, what happens later. It does on both ends if we're not careful. So early in life, the younger that we are, determinism, we're tempted to make the early years all about me. Because I want to experience all these things, and I want to do all these things, and I want to do what I want to do. And a lot of people will say, well, I'll get serious about God later. When I get into that routine, and I've got life figured out, and I've got kids, I want them to grow up in church, then I'll get really serious about God. But that's a waste of valuable time. Paul says this in Romans 12, verse 11, never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. You can do that better when you're younger, right? And so as we, whatever age you are now, you're going to be able to do more now than you will a year from now, more than likely. You'll be able to do more for the Lord now than you will 5 years from now. So whatever, it doesn't matter how old you are, whatever age you are, now is the time to not sit back and say, well, later or after I retire or once this gets figured out or whatever. No, it's like now's the time. Now's the time. Now's the time. So don't let determinism keep you from using that valuable time. But then later in life, what happens is then we regret we didn't do more. That's a big part of that is, oh, I felt like it's too late to make a difference. Like, who's going to listen to me and what difference can I really make? I wasted too much time. I don't have enough energy. I don't have enough to offer. But here's what Paul says, again, Paul in 1 Corinthians 15. He says this, so my dear brothers and sisters, this is 1 Corinthians 15:58. So my dear brothers and sisters, be strong and immovable. Always work enthusiastically for the Lord, for you know that nothing you do for the Lord is ever useless. Maybe you feel like you wasted time. Don't fixate on that. Fix that. Right? Don't think, well, I can't do this. Well, don't focus on what you think you don't think you can't do. Focus on what you think you can do. Right? Your work in the Lord is never useless. It's never in vain. What little you think you have to offer, God can do amazing things with that. Whatever little time you think you have to give to God, give it to him. And if he can multiply bread and fish, he can multiply the effectiveness of your time. He can make you more efficient in what you do as you just give him your time. It's not predetermined. It's not like, well, I missed the boat or I can't do it or whatever. It's like, no. That's determinism. Avoid that. Fight that. So we don't want to have presumption or determinism. So let me close with this. What if I told you there was a third option? Ha ha, magically there's a third option here. What if I said, instead of giving in to presumption that doesn't work or determinism that doesn't work, what if instead we do this? We submit and seek. What if we, instead of presumption or determinism, we submit and seek? A couple of scriptures really quickly as we close. Proverbs 16, verse 9 says this, we can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. Man, isn't that true? It's almost like God knows what he's talking about in the Bible here. Just like the universe is not random chance, it's a divine design. Your life is not random chance. It is divine direction. I mean, I didn't imagine 25 years ago doing this. That was not part of the master plan when I was growing up. It was the furthest thing I wanted to do. Yet when I sensed that change as a high school student, I could have been a determinist and just said, well, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And nothing would have happened. This doesn't just happen, right? There's moves we have to make, things we have to do, put ourselves in the right place. I also didn't live with presumption. I'm going to do what I want, and then maybe later I'll do the ministry thing. No. It's like, if there's something that God is speaking to us, let's act on that. Let's move on that. Let's seek, lean into that and see what God might want to do. We can determine our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. Psalm 90, verse 12 says this, teach us to realize the brevity of life so that we may grow in wisdom. Now, sometimes we look at the first part of that verse and we don't do the second part. We see the brevity of life and we freak out. We think about the brevity of life and we panic. We think about the brevity of life and we're like, we just sit there and twiddle our thumbs and don't know what to do. We're frozen in fear. But James says, no. Seeing that we have limited time should cause us to grow in wisdom. And it's this, the more that I see the limitations I have, the more that I see the limited time I have, the more I want to give what time I have over to God. That is wisdom. My life is a gift on loan from God. My time is a gift on loan from God. That is wisdom. That will change how we live our lives if we have this attitude. So there's a few statements I want to make quickly. And one side is this. Here are things you'll never say if you commit your life and your time to God. And then the alternate of that is what I never want you to say. Okay? So here, when you give your life and your time over to God, you see life this way, you see your time this way, catch this. What you'll never say is, I regret all those years living for Jesus. What I never want you to say is, I regret all the years I lived for me. What you'll never say is, I can't believe the hours I wasted in prayer. What I never want you to say is, I wish I had made that connection so long ago. What you'll never say is, I can't believe I wasted time studying these dusty old scriptures. What I never want you to say is, I can't believe the wisdom I forfeited by ignoring God's clear instruction and wisdom. What you'll never say is, I was way too generous with my time and money. What I never want you to say is, I can't believe how greedy and self-centered I lived for so much of my life. And finally, you'll never say this, I trusted God way too much and am way too blessed for it. You'll never say that. What I don't want you to say is, I trusted myself way too much and I'm living in pain and regret. When we see the brevity of life, it should cause us to grow in wisdom. God, this is your life you've given me. This is your time you've given me. Help me to use it wisely. And that's what we'll close with. Ephesians 5:16, Paul says this, make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. That is wisdom for life. To see every moment as an opportunity to do good. To see every moment as an opportunity to do something good for the sake of the gospel. That's what wisdom for life is. So we want to avoid this life of presumption. We want to submit to God. He will show us a better way. We want to avoid this life of determinism and seek God because he will faithfully guide your steps. He will lead you into the best possible path for your life, into the best possible future for your life, into the best possible use of time for the rest of time, however long that is for each of us. So we avoid these ways. We submit to God and seek God. That is wisdom for life. Let's pray as we close today. God, we understand, we've lived long enough to know that life is unpredictable and time is uncontrollable. So our prayer is, God, help us to live correctly in light of that. God, help us to live how you want us to live, as hard as that can be to navigate and figure out, help us to navigate this life. God, may we live with a very loose grip on our lives and our plans. May we keep you in control of our lives and our plans. May we follow your clear instructions that you've given us and also listen for those subtle hints along the way, those breadcrumbs on our path of life. God, we want to follow you and your way because it is best. We trust in your will. We trust in your sovereignty. And God, as time passes, may we not allow time to pass us by. Give us your wisdom. Give us your insight to see this life as a gift on loan. Whatever time we have left is a gift on loan. So help us to see that as wisdom, to then give it back to you, to take advantage of every opportunity that you give to us, to use our time wisely, to be efficient with what you've given us as this special, special gift, to make an eternal difference here in this life. God, may we remain heavenly minded, eternally focused, and living with purpose, living on purpose for your glory and your greater good. Help us, even this week, as we're around family and friends this holiday season, to use that time wisely. Think about those conversations more deeply. Look at those as opportunities that you might be giving us as open doors, open windows, to maybe spread some seeds of the gospel, spread some seeds of love and goodwill. Help us to look for those chances and opportunities every single day. That is wisdom for life. God, we thank you and praise you for all you've done for us, and we anticipate all you're going to do for us in the coming days, weeks, months, and years as you give them to us ahead. We thank you for it all in Jesus' name. Amen.